What's your emergency?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a place for all things public information related for police, fire, EMS, and local government.
It was a good learning experience for a lot of us that social media is not real life.
But we have to remember the media are very rarely a target audience. They're simply that conduit.
Our words have impacts on individuals, and it may not be positive. So just being thoughtful and mindful of the words that we speak.
I think what's so interesting about this position too, and this job and this profession, is that every one of us is looking for purpose. And when we find it here, that's it.
To know is that a crisis for one is not necessarily a crisis for another.
Hey guys, I wanted to jump on here for a minute. I hope you're enjoying our content. If you could take a moment to look in today's show notes at the bottom, you're going to see a link that says support the show. The PIO Podcast needs support to keep connecting with these amazing resources. Any amount helps. Thanks, everybody. We really appreciate it.
I cannot believe we are in the month of April already. In this month, we will hear from PIOs all across the country. On April 18th, we will have a live panel discussion, and the topic is transparency, the new buzzword of the 21st century. Sign up today by going to the link at the bottom of today's show notes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode.
Good morning. Today in the PIO Podcast,
I would like to welcome public relations professionals Liesl DeGrave from DeGrave Communications and Rachel Dickman from RMG Communications. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
So, ladies, let's talk about your background, how you became working with public sector agencies and the whole private sector firm stuff. So let's hear it.
Sure, I can go first. My background is in comms. I knew early on that I wanted to go into communication. So right out of college, I went there to UCLA and I majored in communications. And I had the opportunity after that to actually come back home to my hometown and start working at that city and their communications department. And from there, it just kind of took off. I ended up working at several other cities in a large water utility out in Southern California before hanging in my shingle and going out on my own. And a lot of that I attribute to LaSalle. She gave me a lot of good advice on going out. It had been something I always wanted to do. But there were just different circumstances in my life. I was married at the time and, you know, my husband wasn't really in, what's the word I'm looking for? He really didn't support my transition to going out on my own. So I waited until, you know, I was on my own to make those decisions. And that's kind of how I got here.
Yeah. So my background has always been in public relations. It's what I studied in college. I went to work for a big PR firm right out of school. And then I realized that I didn't want to work 60 hours a week on very little pay. And so I saw an opportunity at a water district. And so the benefits were amazing. I would have no commute. And but I thought it was going to be boring. And so that was really, that experience opened my eyes to really the public sector world. From there, I decided to start my own firm, but still I was working at that water district. I went to go work for another water district. And so I've really been working, you know, I still work with that client that I used to work for internally. So I've been doing it for, you know, 20 plus years. And Rachel and I like to joke, we met in the company Prius. So we did meet while working in a public agency together. And for that reason, both of our firms work with public agencies. We get it. We understand what it's like working with boards and city councils. We've been in the shoes of the PIO or the communications team or an organization that doesn't have a comms team at all. So that's kind of how we got started. We both have worked internally and now we're out on our own.
So you kind of understand the whole public sector budget thing. It doesn't exist for comms, right? Which is bizarre, but you know, I shouldn't say that. Slowly, a lot of agencies are learning this in the city side of government, In the law enforcement side, it's a totally different story. It's usually non-existent. But, you know, at the larger departments, they obviously have a budget for it. But those, even the medium-sized departments that I had when I was in Colorado Springs, they didn't really have a budget for the communications department there at all. All right. So the whole reason we're here is we're talking about a book that you guys co-authored. So you guys co-authored a practical guide. I got it. The practical guide to starting your own PR firm. Why did you guys write this book? Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, well, it's really simple. Well, it's really simple, Robert. After years of having colleagues and friends interested on going out on their own, they weren't sure how to do it. And it was always, can we meet for coffee? We want to pick your brain, right? And so we just decided, let's put pen to paper. Rachel and I realized that we had wanted to both write a book, and we thought, why don't we, you know, do this together? So when you read the book, it's really like sitting with us and having coffee. It's anything that we would discuss if we were, you know, going one-on-one. And so we really try to share insights in a relatable way. And to be honest, the book is relevant to any small business. When we were recording the Audible, for example, our sound engineer expressed, literally, we would finish recording a chapter and he would say, that's exactly, those are the same challenges I deal with as a small business owner. So I think it's really relevant to a lot of other areas that aren't necessarily comms or you know, PIO related.
Okay, great. So the spark was a conversation, obviously, with other people in the field saying, hey, I want to know, how can you do this? What was, when the book first came out and you showed it to some of the other professionals, you know, what was kind of the thought? What did they say?
A lot of people were really grateful. They knew it was something we were working on over the last 6 to 9 months, and we kept doing things like, we can't wait to get it when it's out. We're so excited. And they've really found it, so far from the feedback we've received, a really good resource. And we even had one person leave us a 5-star review, but they said after reading it, they realized that they didn't want to go out on their own because it's a lot of work. After we laid out the whole process of how to start a business, how to run a business, and they realized that that wasn't for them, but they appreciated knowing what was actually involved with that.
Oh, you know what? And I'll tell you, for somebody that had a business, I had a business for an S corp for a number of years, and that was an interesting lesson that I learned, was just the sheer amount of paperwork that you have to get it started, and then the annual stuff that you have to do in order to deal with it. So yeah, it can be daunting for somebody that's never done it before and is not comfortable in doing it. Okay, let's start off from the very beginning. In the book, what should someone consider before they go out on their own? What's the number one consideration?
Well, to get started, you have to remember that PR is not as glamorous as people think, especially if you're in that PIO role working in government. The reality might be that you're planning a special event and part of your job is ordering porta potties. That's a true story. Or you're having to give, and we've all been there, right? Or you might have to give a tour at a recycled water plant, also a true story. And those aren't the things that you see in those highlight reels, whether people are working in-house or on their own. You see that fun and fancy stuff. They might be at a conference speaking, or they might be accepting an award somewhere or working on a really cool project. But that's probably what only 10% of our job really consists of. And the other 90% of having that PR business is working from our home office. Most days, I think you see a good idea of what it looks like. These are our home offices. We're here working. A lot of times we're just in comfy clothes and we're running that business. So that might mean client meetings and pitches, researching and developing campaigns, creating proposals, or even like managing finances, staff and contractors. So it's all that behind the scenes stuff that goes into it too, which is a lot of work. So what we wanted with this book is to have folks take a step back and answer, why do I really want to start my business?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Robert.
No, go ahead, Lisa. I'll ask my question afterwards. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. I know you asked when someone, you know, what should they consider before they go out on their own? And Rachel just hit the nail on the head. It's really like that why. but also understanding the reality of you're running a business, you're not just going to be doing comms. We kind of share this in the book, but it's about 30%. I'd say only about 30% of what we do is actual comms, PIO, PR work. Another 30% is the business side of it. Like you said, business development, paperwork, payroll, going out and networking, anything it's on the business side, which regardless of what type of business owner you are, that's something that has to be done. You have to do it running a PR firm. And then the other 30%, we kind of half joke about this, but you're really a therapist, whether that's with one of your employees, whether it's one of your contractors, whether it's those clients that just, they can't let it be an email, right? It has to be a phone call. So we are also therapists.
Well, especially when you're dealing with like a campaign and they say put together a campaign and you do all this work for it and you deliver them the campaign, and they're like, I don't like it. Give me something else.
Let's start over. Yeah.
And that's tough for some people to have. I mean, in the law enforcement end of it, in comms, when we put together scripts for a training or something where we have to have our chief speak at, those are very straightforward. You can anticipate a great many of those questions, but I think in some of the other parts of the comms industry, it's a lot broader in perspective. So yeah, it's interesting. There are a variety of ways of setting up a business, and your book kind of lays it out, but what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of an S-Corp, an LLC, and a sole proprietorship?
Yeah, these for your listeners, this might be something that they're hearing for the first time. And I just want to start by saying, disclaimer, we are not CPAs or attorneys, and we're really clear on that in the book. But what we share is our own life experiences and what we found just in working in business. So Rachel and I both started as sole prop for short, sole proprietors. It's free. It's a really good place to start if you're not sure if having your business is something that you want to do long-term. It's really the easiest way. It's the least expensive. It literally doesn't cost you anything. You can go online and get an EIN number today if you want to. You want to be careful because from state to state, there are some differences in these classifications. So it's always good to check with your Secretary of State. But it is a good place to start. There's, like I said, there's no initial startup. But when you have a sole prop, you also don't have a separate business entity. So essentially, you are the business and your personal assets and liabilities are not separate from the business. So you want to be cautious because you could be held personally liable for any debts or obligations of the business. So for Rachel and I, we both reached a point in our firms that we were making a certain amount. And thankfully, we have really good people behind the scenes, like our CPAs and attorneys that we work with, and multiple times from different experts, they were saying, yes, it's time to transition to an S corporation. So the S corporation, or S corp for short, is the advantage is you're paying less on the advantage of this corporate structure is in the ability to circumvent the drawback of double taxation that's typically associated with regular C corporations. So it makes it a beneficial choice because the proprietor is not subjected to corporate tax rates. So instead, your business profits and losses are transferred to your personal income. So that's one of the reasons it made sense. We were paying too much in self-employment tax, and we were told you should set up an S corp. So essentially what happens when it goes that way is you have to dissolve your sole prop, and then you create a brand new business. Essentially, it can have the same name, everything. But we are both operating as sole props. And then the third one you asked about, the LLCs, that's another great option for getting started. There is a fee associated with that, but you can reap the benefits of both a partnership and a corporation. So in an LLC, you're generally protected from personal liability. So if your business faces a lawsuit or bankruptcy, your personal assets are protected in most cases. And that's why you see a lot of people that are starting out starting as LLCs, because you get a little bit more protection than you would if you were just a sole prop.
Right, right. And then nobody wants to lose their house over something, you know, that was unforeseen. Absolutely. Someone who's got the business in place, they've already created the LLC or the S-Corp or whatever it might be. Let's talk about this. How do they go about developing clients? They're a new PR firm. How do they do it?
And we really wish there was a one-size-fits-all approach to this.
We get that. I totally get that. So just give us, you know, just let's say we're spitballing. We're throwing it off the wall.
Yes. And, you know, what it really boils down to, though, is just a lot of hustle. Some of these things that I might talk about sound basic, but it's just a lot of routine things and follow-up. You can start by pulling together a list of agencies or people you want to work with, who you know, and start reaching out to them to see if they need help. Just as simple as that. Your first degree of people are probably going to be the easiest, the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, of who your clients may be. And then also, if you're looking to specialize in government, you might want to spend some time setting up for bid boards. And each agency has them. You can usually go to their procurement page. And then you can, type in your name, and then you'd like to receive emails or contacts when there's a job that fits your scope available. So those are the easy things. And then I also like to encourage people, because you're going to hear a lot of no's before you hear a yes. And sometimes those no's actually are not no's, but they're not right now. For instance, in government, as you know, Robert, it's pretty standard that some agencies, they go out to bid and they solicit bids and then award maybe a 3-year contract. So maybe there's someone that really wants to work with you, but they're already tied into using a PR firm for 3 years or 5 years or whatever it is. And we actually had that happen not too long ago with a colleague of ours. He moved to a different city and we reached out and said, you know, we'd love to work with you. And he basically said that. He's like, I have a few firms under contract, but I'll let you know if something comes up. And sure enough, a couple years later, we ended up having that opportunity to work with them. But sometimes in government, especially, it's a slower burn because there's a lot of different things. Or even if you don't have to go out to bid, you might have to get 3 estimates. And there's just a lot more time than on the private side where you can just say, okay, yeah, I like you, I'm going to work with you.
Right. And I'll tell you this. One of the things that I've seen work very well is working with your local Rotary, attending the local Rotary meetings and just getting your name out there. There are many times people are not satisfied with the organizations that are handling their public relations. And it's that one-on-one, you know, morning breakfast where you're talking about, you know, local business. And you just say, hey, I have a small PR firm. I'm looking for a client. If I can help you, give me a call.
Yeah, Robert, it's all about who you know. We wish there was some kind of magic formula out there, but there isn't. It's really about networking. We get that all the time. I've met with people who have said, but I'm just so nervous. Like, I don't know how to get people to hire me. People work with people that they know, they like, they trust, right? So your existing network really will become your catalyst. Like Rachel mentioned, in government, we have to submit RFPs. It's one of those necessary evils. We do know some folks in the PR world that are so specialized and so niche, you know, in a certain area that they work in, that they don't have to fill out RFPs. They're just that go-to. They can be sole sourced. And so we always joke that's like the end goal, right? If you don't have to put together a 90-page RFP for an organization, that's great. But when you're starting out, you're going to have to do that. Go after those small ones. They may not be very profitable, but once you get your foot in the door, like Rachel said with that other client, you start doing good work. And I know, again, it sounds really basic, but you do good work and you will remain, you know, a consultant for them. And there's a lot of hustle that goes into running your own business, but show your work. Your work samples really become your marketing materials. And so that's what it really takes, is just get out there and get, you know, get to work. Try to secure something through your, you know, existing network, and then grow your existing network.
And another good avenue too, Robert, kind of along the lines of what you talked about with Rotary, I would recommend that if someone does want to go out and maybe focus on government PR or just PR is joining your local associations like the Public Relations Society of America chapter in your area. If you're interested more in government, CAPIO, California Association of Public Information Officials, or 3CMA, which is basically the national version of that. Really good resources. That's where we spent a lot of time since we worked in Gov. We had those relationships from those associations, and that's where a lot of our clients come from.
And I do have to say that in several cases, when I was in Colorado Springs, I worked with the PRSA out there, and they were phenomenal. They were a great resource. I met several people that had organizations out there, agencies out there that were just, they just happened to be there, and they've picked up business from some of the local government entities that, you know, you wouldn't. And I think a lot of people forget that even though it's a local government, there's a difference between local government that is like a city government and an enterprise government organization. Like in Colorado, we had the parking authority was a enterprise authority, as well as the power and gas company were enterprises. They were all part of the city government, but they made profit, so it was a little different. And those were
And I think anecdotally, just from our clients, definitely those enterprise agencies have a lot larger budgets than a lot of the cities normally do because of the profit side of it.
All right. So I know both of you said that you work from home. Does a brick and mortar location matter?
No. The simple answer is you don't need to be any specific place physically. At least we haven't found that to be the case. It's a huge overhead cost, and you could use the money that you're saving to put back into your business or put back into your bank account. Most of the work that we do, like Rachel said, is we're just sitting at our desk doing work, checking email, on Zoom calls. And the reality is when we meet with our clients, if we had a physical office, I don't think they would ever go to us because we're always trying to make it convenient for them. We're either meeting, you know, at their office, or we're going out, we're breaking bread, we're having lunch, we're having coffee. So there's really, honestly, we don't think there's any logical reason to spend money on a brick and mortar. And then also just the way our team is set up, it's not necessary.
Okay, that's excellent. So since other PR firms, they compete for business, they're competing for business, obviously, you mentioned this, a niche. Should a PR firm consider a niche?
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this a little bit already, but having a specialization will really set you apart, especially if you want to stay within government, whether that's city government or counties, JPAs, water districts, whatever it is. And after a while, they all sort of meld together, right? Because government organizations just function really similarly. We also work with nonprofits. Again, they don't have huge budgets, but they have board of directors. They a lot of times have a lean team. And so again, we've kind of found both of those areas that we work in. And to answer your question, when I first got started out, you know, I'll be honest, I was a little burnt out. I said, I don't want to work with government agencies. I want to try something new. I started working with a skincare company, a lifestyle brand, and different, for-profit businesses that were of interest to me. And I really quickly found out that my brain functions better in a government, within a government organization. And so, it wasn't, you know, I don't think that those organizations really valued what my skill set was, and I found that it was a better fit for public agency. And so I think it's good to try out different things. It almost reassures you that you're in the right place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that you go where you know, right? You go where you know.
I like that.
And when you go where you know, too, a part of that for us, the majority of agencies we work with are in those areas where we have that expertise. So there's those specializations within government. We don't do a lot of public safety because that's not our niche, but we do a lot of water. We've been doing a lot of, in California, there's a lot of regulations around recycling outreach that we have to do. Then we do a lot of city projects and programs like State of the Cities. We do a lot of publications for these agencies. And one of the other things we're known for, too, is podcasting.
Excellent. In such an area that's growing in both city government and in law enforcement, I have been approached several times asking for how to start a podcast. And as a matter of fact, I'm working with a PR firm out in Boston, and I'm putting together a video, training video for them so that they can present it to their clients and stuff. These are the kinds of things that, yeah, they're all new, but it's a really great resource for the community. All right, so let's talk branding. And anything, public relations is branding, right? I mean, that says it all right there. What suggestions would you have for a PR firm for their branding?
Yeah, it goes back to what I said earlier, that people work with people that they like, they know, and they trust. And if you think about that, that really is, you are your brand, right? People are going to work with you because they know who you are. I know you mentioned the Rotary Club. When you're showing up to the Rotary Club, you have an objective to be there, right? You want to meet people. You potential clients could be there. Even potential resources. Maybe you need somebody on your team, and you might meet someone there that has that skill set. But what do you look like when you show up? Are you on time? How do you present yourself? Right? Those are all your physical branding. Those are all things that people are going to see just as much as your website. We follow a process called organic branding. And we've kind of made this up. I think we've coined this term, but it goes back to when I first started. I was years ago started my business, and we're not graphic designers, but we have amazing designers that work with us. My original logo was literally created on a Word doc. It was a D and C, and they're back to back. And I've been able to keep that throughout the brand, you know, through the years of branding. But the point is, you don't want to get analysis paralysis. I think a lot of people just get stuck in this hole where they don't know where to start. They're overwhelmed. I need all these branding items. No, I mean, in today's society, you don't even need a business card, right? You can do digital. You're just touching your phone up against somebody else, and now they have your contact information. You've got LinkedIn. Like, there's so many resources that you don't need a full, you know, all the bells and whistles, if you will. It's just, you can get started with what you do have.
I really like the digital business card. I really like that. It's a really great way to pass your information around. And somebody say, hey, do you have somebody's contact information? Literally, you're just sending them everything. I've encountered three or four of those. I set one up for myself. I don't really have a reason to put it out there, but I mean, it's one of those things where when you do meet somebody that has one, it's so much simpler because, you know, I hated carrying business cards around. And half the time, the ones that you got stayed in your pocket and then they ended up in the wash, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Oh, no. We're good. We're good.
Okay. So what's the first step? What's the first step? We're starting out. We're working on our clients. For the individuals, the single person in the firm, what's their first step, do you think, that they need to make sure that they do right?
The first step is just get going. And what we mean by that is, whether you're just getting your EIN number in place or reading this book, owning a business is going to be that evolving process. And you just have to always be taking that next step. So once, you'll feel really rewarded. You'll feel like you at least could check something off and say, okay, a business isn't, it's like Rome, right? It's not built in a day. But once you start just making those little steps forward, you'll notice within even a week or a month that you've made a lot of progress on some of those foundational items of your business. And it builds that confidence inside you. And you realize, I can do this. Because if you look at it all at once, it's really daunting, especially if you don't have investment angels, or you don't have a ton of money at first to put into your business, and you're trying to do this all on the side, and maybe you're trying to start it out as a side hustle and grow it from there, and on top of your job, and then on top of everything in your personal life and family, it can be a lot. But when you break it down into those tiny pieces, it's going to be a lot more manageable.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think the initial step is figuring out how, are you going to be a sole prop? Are you going to be an S corporate? Because you want to get that EIN number and get rolling. But once you've done that, Rachel's right. Just get going. Set weekly goals, monthly goals, yearly goals, and just little by little attack them, you know, make a list of potential clients, attend a networking event. Like our book says, just get started today. So you just need to do something. I know even in our own businesses, they're ever evolving. We work with a lot of local government, but we're slowly transitioning, expanding to be able to work with federal contracting. And there's a lot of work we're finding out that goes into that. And
oh my God, yes.
getting on the GSA schedule. And so it's so much work. And we've held back for so long because we let's get started on it. And then it's like, we get into the pool and then we kind of like take a step back. And now it feels like we're at a place that our businesses are, they're thriving, they're doing well, and we're going to go there. So.
Oh my God. When I had my business, I did some training for the Bureau of Interior and I had to go through that whole SAM site and all that other, I mean, it was monumental paperwork. I mean, nothing but, I will say the government is nothing but paperwork. They know how to do it well.
Yeah.
They really do. But it was worth it in the end. They pay very well. I was very happy with that.
Good. Yeah, we're working with a firm that's helping us through that process. So again, and that's something that we recommend in the book over and over again. Use resources that could be available to you. Most PIOs are not CPAs or, you know, attorneys. And so seek out those people, or if you have friends in those industries, we can't do it alone. Right. So it's okay to ask for help.
So guys, what does success look like to you?
Yeah. Well, as a business owner, I think success looks different to everyone. Even between Rachel and I, we both run our own firms and we measure that differently. That's really up to your listener. That's up to that business owner, whether it's, do you want to go out on your own because you less commuting, you don't want to pay toll roads, you don't want to spend hours in California traffic, right? Do you want to work remotely? Do you want to, for me, I love feeding the chickens at lunchtime. So, like whatever that looks like to you, a more balanced life. I think that's what success, you know, is it a dollar amount? So that's going to be really, really subjective and different to everyone.
Yeah. And I think personally for me, it's more about the time freedom. When we were in government, it was before 2020 and COVID and all of that, where they had more flexible schedules. So it was really more in government about butts in seats, where, you know, like everyone was pointing fingers, the board was pointing it back at the general manager. No one knew who created this rule, but everyone told you, you had to be in your seat 9 to 5. And to me, like, that just wasn't the way I wanted to live my life, especially when you know you can do the same work from home. You don't need to be physically in your seat there. So to me, it's time freedom. Piece of working at home, like, is big to me. I love just being by myself as much as I do in comms. I am also more on like the introverted side. So being able to work with my cats is nice. And I just sit here and get stuff done. I love to travel. My husband he works for himself too. And with his job, he travels a lot. So when I don't have to be anywhere, I can go with him. Or if I was working internally, I don't get that. And I think sometimes, you know, the money comes with that too, you know, and you have to kind of ask yourself those hard questions, you know, do you really want to make a certain amount because you think you need to, or do you have to? And what is it? Because sometimes, you know, it's that old saying, money doesn't always bring happiness. So I do make a little less probably than I did when I was managing internally, but, you know, overall, I feel like I have a lot more wealth through my life with all those different areas.
And I'll tell you, that's one thing in the comms field that we don't do very well. We don't do a lot of self-care. It is something that is very out in front right now in the field, where that's talked about a lot more than it used to be. But nobody did aftercare for PIOs after a major incident or anything like that. But that's much more common now. And whole quality of life thing, I think, is important, because I'll tell you, in the law enforcement field, the 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning wake up, and then you were there for 12 hours after that. And, you know, you were supposed to be somewhere with your kids. And then you were supposed to, you know, you had a family event to go to and you missed that family event. That can take its toll. So, like you said, that work-life balance is very important. We're going to jump into some rapid-fire questions.
Yay!
All right, here we go. Texting or talking?
Texting.
Texting. 100%.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla.
Vanilla.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Tea. Iced tea, primarily, but tea.
Adult drink of choice?
Bloody Mary.
Kendall Jackson Chardonnay.
Okay, what would be your superpower if you could have one?
Healing.
Mary Poppins' ability to put away laundry. I would never want to do laundry again.
That's a good one. Ask permission or beg for forgiveness?
Beg for forgiveness every time.
Agree.
It's a PIO way. place you most want to travel to?
I would love to see the Northern Lights anywhere.
I'm definitely in island mode, so I'm good just going back to Kauai.
First celebrity crush?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas, I think.
For me, it was Leo DiCaprio. I'm embarrassed to say that now.
I know.
And we're out of his age range now. Apparently, he only likes like 20-year-olds.
Oh, we're past that time.
Yeah. Guilty pleasure food?
Cuban food. Anything Cuban.
The nachos with that like kind of fake Velveeta cheese on it.
Rachel.
It's so good though. I had some at the ball game the other day. I'm like, I'm missing out. This is so good.
Who would you choose if you could have coffee with any historical figure alive or dead today?
I don't think there's anybody that I'd want to sit with. I would honestly just probably say Jesus. That I think that'd be pretty rad.
And I would want to have coffee or tea with Nostradamus.
Oh, you want to find out if any of that stuff's real.
I do.
That was an interesting thing I got locked into as a kid was Nostradamus. Well, teenager, I had read the several different books that were written about him, and it is intriguing.
Yes.
All right, ladies, final thoughts. What key points would you like the listeners to take from today's interview?
I think we just want to let your listeners know to be encouraged. We really wrote the book as a tool to encourage people to get started. You can do it. We're both living proof that Rachel and I have different stories of how we got to where we are, but it's definitely possible. You can leave your job if that's something that you want to do, and just be encouraged.
And also realize that, you know, no one's more special than you are, has a certain gift. We're both of average intelligence. We were never in eight. We never were in like any, you know, straight A programs or anything. But I think it boils down to grit and perseverance. And we're very much like roll your sleeves up, get dirty. We may not know how to do it, but we're sure as heck going to find out.
And we'll order porta potties if we have to.
I have done that so many times. So, guys, how can people best reach out to you if they want to maybe connect with you and talk about your book, or if they want to pick your brain for starting a PR firm, or if there's somebody that's looking for a niche PR firm and they want to talk to you too?
Yeah, well, we're both very findable online. We're on LinkedIn. Our firms have Instagram accounts. Rachel's firm can be found at rmgcom.com, and you can find me at degravepr.com. And we also have a podcast website, pressingonpodcast.com.
And I will add all of that into the show notes when this comes out, when the podcast comes out, so people will be able to find you even easier. Ladies, thank you very much for coming on the show. That was Liesl DeGrave and Rachel Dickman. You guys, thank you for writing this practical guide to starting your own PR firm. I love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all for this week. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified on the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows you to leave a review, please give us a review. Any review is appreciated. To support our efforts with the PIO podcast, you can click on the support button in the show notes, and any donation is appreciated. Thank you.